faith-filled finance. All major UK bank accounts. One app. Provision is built by Christians to help you steward what God's given you. Track your spending, saving, and giving in one place. Join the waitlist now at provision.money and get your first month free. That's provision.money.
Leadership File on Premier.
Welcome to the show which helps you lead where God has placed you. I'm Andy Peck. You will know that there are many tools around to help us understand ourselves and others, but the most widely used is the Myers-Briggs Temperament Preference Indicator, MBTI. Every year, 2.5 million people take this. The story goes that the creator, Isabel Myers, was reading through the book of Romans and came to the section in Romans 12 which spoke of how we all had differing gifts. And she wondered why, if this was the case, she found the personalities of people at church so challenging. Well, to talk about leadership and personality, I'm joined by a man who has used the MBTI in the UK and overseas in his training of leaders in a variety of settings. His name is Phil Carter. He's been a good friend of mine for some 31 years, and I caught up with him via Skype.
So, Phil, is it true that you started your interest in Myers-Briggs because someone told you that your extreme extroversion would destroy introverts?
I'm afraid to say that is exactly the case. But rather than just talk about that situation, there may be many people listening to this show for whom a similar message could be put forward. So, for example, although in my case, as you pointed out, is because I had an extreme preference for the extroversion, there are other people who have an ability not to destroy introverts, but rather to suck the daylights out of extroverts. The message may not be that for other church leaders listening this morning or this evening. It may be a situation that you are able to organise the life out of your church. Or it may be that for other people listening, the message that would come across for them would be you are able to have so much change in your situation at church that you can actually destroy anything that's going to last. And so it goes on. It's this idea that there may be a certain aspect about our personality that unwittingly we are stamping on other people and not knowing. I'd like to imagine it's a little bit like looking out of your rear view mirror when you drive and sort of notice through life there seem to be a lot of car accidents happening in your rear view mirror. And so, yes, this is the case. And at the point when I was told this, I took up the book which Myers-Briggs wrote, which is called Gifts Differing. And then I went on to take the qualification and become qualified, which I have been for over 30 years now.
It might be worth, Phil, just outlining the four kind of approaches, shall we say, the EI, NS, etc., just in case people have not quite grasped what we're talking about.
Thank you. And if you already know the MBTI, can I apologise? Now's the time to go and just make yourself a coffee. But it goes like this, that all of us have preferences. So people listening, if you have a preference for using your right hand, eventually you will use your right hand all the time and you will get better at it. This is the idea of maybe at the beginning you could have used both, but after a while you get better, more comfortable. And in Myers-Briggs, the first axis, I'll use axis as a term, is the which world are you most concerned about? Which world are you most comfortable in? And which world gives you energy? So as Andy is probably will outline, I'm actually quite a strong extrovert. So for me, the external world is important. And one example of this is I would prefer to think as I speak. So you may have come across them in the Bible studies. They talk, and they'll change their opinion as they talk. And this can be really frustrating because the first things they say are probably, if not rubbish, at least a bit suspect. So that would be a typical E, where someone has a preference for the internal world. They would sit and like to consider and gather their thoughts before contributing to a group. So that is which world is most important. And then what do we rely on in terms of our understanding of the world? Some people have a preference for facts, for the senses, for what they feel, for what they can see, the concrete, if you like. Whereas other people have a preference for ideas, images and hunches. So this can show itself on the people who need to have detail compared to the people who need to see the big picture. Where does this fit in? So that's the second one. The third one is, how do we make decisions? One of the preferred ways, which would be called T, is the idea of going through all the repercussions. If we did this, what would that be like? If we did this, what would it? And get to the outcomes, review the outcomes, and hence make a decision. And that is one way of preferred decisions. Another way of decisions is just a pure value judgment, which goes along the lines of, I just think we should do this. So this is the decision making. And the final one is, once we've made a decision, what do we do about it? And this is called a J and P preference. And a J person just wants a decision. They want clarity. They want order. So if they have a meeting, they will want to know, can we fit all the dates in? Can we allocate preachers to the dates? This sort of things. Whereas the other side, which would be P, would like a more spontaneous approach. You could over-spiritualize it and say a freedom of the spirit, which would leave slots open for various people to come in. It would not. The P person would not want to... tie it all down. They would hope that there would be gaps in which changes could happen.
Now, I mean, the psychologist and popular thinker Jordan B. Peterson, he said that MBTI was good in its day, but has been surpassed by what he calls the five traits approach. Obviously, there were many others. I mean, is there still a place for Myers-Briggs today, given it is relatively old as a sort of measure?
I must say that Jordan Peterson is one of my personal heroes in terms of a precise mind and able to highlight things that most of us miss. But he's often the first one to say, that is not my area of expertise. And I suspect that Myers-Briggs, again, is not his area of expertise, because Myers-Briggs had a major revamp around 2000, 2004, which was the Myers-Briggs Step 2, which was, instead of it being four, lines of which you can describe yourself, each of those lines started to have five different facets. So it absolutely exploded in terms of its precision, in terms of what it could do. And on all the documents I've read and I've listened to Jordan on this, it would appear, and I can only say appear, that he is comparing his five-trait approach to the original Myers-Briggs of the four sections, coming up with 16 different personality preferences. And the other thing, I'm very against traits at all. Just to explain to the listeners that actually psychological models fit very much into two camps. There is the trait camp, which is a model of what do you do. Yeah, if you were in this situation, what would you do? What would you do? What would you do? So it's the external behaviours that are being examined. And I'm very, very concerned about this, because it is what most of us do struggle with, which is the idea of being put in a box. And what it says, a trait models say that if you do this, then you are like that. Whereas Myers-Briggs is, what would you prefer to do? And just a little story on why I have such a, I won't say a pathological hatred, but I do have a lot of concerns about trait analysis, is I went to a CWR weekend, and they were part of that weekend. They include a Hudson Taylor trait analysis, and not Hudson Taylor, got on, Johnson Taylor. Forgive me, analysis. And in this, after we did it all, the person came back to me and he said, look, you've got a very, very low score on self-discipline. Therefore, it doesn't matter what you learn, because you won't apply it anyway. And at that point, I started to understand that that was a flaw, whereas Myers-Briggs, over many years, I've seen actually bless people, change situations and produce some light where there was dark, and maybe some peace where there was trauma.
I mean, turning to leadership, obviously the leadership file, you know, how does MBTI help us as leaders?
A great question. And as you can imagine, this one, it would be possible to go weeks and weeks. But I'm going to pick on one to start with, if that's OK with us. I'm going to say that MBTI helps us fulfil the Great Commission. And the way I would like to explain that is because if we don't know what a disciple looks like, if instead of that we only know what we look like, if we're not careful, our version of disciples will not be people like Jesus. They will be people like us. And this is a real problem. How can I put this carefully? So. In fact, I'll just back off if it's okay. I'll back off a bit. It goes like, if we don't understand ourselves, and when I say understand ourselves, we understand what makes us comfortable, the Myers-Briggs understanding of ourselves, then it's the default position is there's almost what are we expecting from others? If we don't understand ourselves, I need to try and make this a little clearer for the listeners. If I use the example, we're called to love. We're called to love others as ourselves. Remember the verse: called to love others as ourselves. But also for some of us, we are our own worst enemies. So is God really saying, love this person like you love yourself? By the way, I hate myself, and there's a struggle there. And so with Myers Briggs, among other things, the idea is to separate out what is true for everyone and what is true for us. In fact, the clearest way I can put this is if you understand your personality, you can, instead of asking yourself, what would Jesus do or what would Jesus think, you can change that to what would Jesus do or what would Jesus think if he had been given my personality? Now, this is so freeing because the idea is there is not one size that fits all. And often our discipleship programs can have an end point, which is to get the people like we imagine mature Christians look like.
So, if you look at the fruit of the Spirit, the love, joy, peace, etc., that is kind of filtered through our personality. Yeah. And so an extrovert's love may be different from an introvert's kind of love, even though the quality might be the same. Would that be fair?
Yeah, in fact, that's really helpful, because what I'd like to say is, so if we go back to the, and this isn't the Christian particularly, but the golden rule, which is love others as you would do unto others as you would do to yourself. Now, as an extrovert, if I want to love myself, I would go out and have loads of conversations. I would meet new people. I'd have a day full of people. So if I was going to love you, Andy, and you've got a different preference, I'd say, what we'll do today for Andy, because I love him, is I'm going to take him and get him to meet 100 different people. How would that make you feel? Would you feel loved, Andy?
Probably not. I'd give me a few people to have deep conversations with, fair enough, but not loads and loads and loads, no.
And it's this sort of context of that unless we get an idea of our personality, whether we use Myers-Briggs or something else, then it's going to be very hard for us to know how to love someone else. In fact, there's something called, instead of the golden rule, there's called something called the platinum rule. And in the platinum rule, it says it don't love someone as you would, don't do unto someone as you would have them do to you. Do to someone as they would have them you do to them. The idea is that they know better than you how to be loved. But as Christians, we've got to be very careful about this because, this is where, if we're not careful, we go away from gospel and we sort of go into a self-help guru, you can be everything you want type world. No, so what we want as Christians, we don't want the platinum version of the golden rule. We want the platinum plus version. So what we want to do is we want to love each other as the other person would have us do, but not everything about the other person. We actually only, we want to love the other person as in the new person that Christ has put in that person. Not, if we're not careful, otherwise we can be building up the old man. You could say, I know Phil, he likes drinking a lot, so we'll go out drinking. I mean, it's a silly example, but the idea is that to love the other person as the work, the new man that is in that other person, that Jesus is Christ is building up, that is the person that we need to be loving, not the old man. and we need to love it in the way the personality would receive it.
No, that's really helpful. So, I mean, obviously, maybe behind this question is, you know, so what preference was Jesus?
Oh, again, this is why I love preference and not trait. Jesus was obedient to his Father's will. And so we could put the old microscope on and you know, see, well, there was this and there was that. And maybe we can, you know, we could surmise various things. If I was doing that, I would say I think Jesus was probably an introvert because all of his words were measured. He never made a mistake in what he said, which is us extroverts would be struggling with. You might say he it could be what's called intuitive because he uses a lot of stories, a lot of analogies, not a lot of detail. In loads of places, he doesn't give us the detail. But I'd rather look on this as his preference, Andy, and it's not just what people do. And Jesus submitted to the will to his Father. And if our Heavenly Father calls us to be in a particular place, you know, we believe he will equip us in order to do that.
Well, you're listening to The Leadership File with me, Andy Peck, and we'll be back just after this. I'm joined by a man who has used the MBTI in the UK and overseas. Phil Carter, he's been a good friend of mine for
some years. You are off the scale in your extroversion and in your intuition. So knowing what you do about the other preferences, how have you modified your leadership approach to kind of take into account the fact that many others who work with you and who you lead are a different preference to you?
Yeah, this comes down very practically because I've worked as a career as a trainer across the world, and as such you get evaluation sheets, and if I allowed myself to be fully in my natural preferences, then at least probably 75% of the people would just tick, this was awful, please let me out, never let me do this again. So if you like, I've been blessed by having a career where I'm forced to actually consider how do people receive this. And some tips, if any of your leaders are listening and they have an extroversion tips, then you have lots of exercises that involve people writing down their ideas, not talking. I mean, I'd encourage this in church meetings and leadership teams. If you've got a mixed team, you get to a certain point and you say, well, we're looking at how we're going to go out into the community. At that point, you hand out pens and papers and you say, right, we're gonna have 5-10 minutes for us to think about it. And thus, if you like, that would balance off the E, let's be talking a lot. And then for intuition, and for this, it's the importance of having facts. I naturally, those that know me, I have a nodding relationship with detail. I have been, to balance that out, especially in church life where there's a lot of preference for facts, I make sure that I have all the references written down beforehand. So the detail, where in the Bible did this come? What verse, what reference, what version? So if you like, so pre-arm myself as someone who is highly intuitive with a lot of facts to actually support what I'm doing, even though I would find that really challenging to work around. Also, another bit for intuition is make it concrete. The trouble for people who have a lot of ideas is like, how does this work? How will it look? You know, make substance out of the ethereal, if you like. And there were just two ways. And obviously, different personalities would have to work at ways of mitigating.
Okay, so this is a tricky question, Phil. But is any of the combination of preferences not especially suited to leading? Especially for leaders listening who know what they are.
Oh, this is a great one. The first one I'd like to point out is I have a good friend who's a church leader who took the Myers-Briggs and I'm not sure if leaders are ever allowed to use this phrase, but he swore blind he was a particular preference. And it was 20 years later he sort of came clean that as a leader he felt he should be that preference, so he answered the question, so he became that preference. But what I would say is here, and this is really important, I think this is important, is, and on this program, is what do you define leadership as? You know, for many people, leadership is facilitation of a team. Or leadership is supervising an individual. Or leadership is managing the budget or managing a church meeting. So if you like, there is a large range of leaderships. And within the range of leadership, I believe there is space for, especially if God equips. And we'll come back to the other side, the concept of the difference between talents and gifts. And I think this is really important. But if you're talking big church and envisioning taking a change of a big church, I'm afraid there has to be E. There has to be an energy that you have to want to be with people. You, as they used to say, you have to want to press the flesh. You want to be out there. If you're going to envisage, you have to have an idea. You have to have a vision where you're going. So you're looking at intuitive. After that, if you like the latter two ones, are not as significant. But that's one slot of leadership. There's a lovely book. There's a lovely book by Maxwell, and maybe you've had it on your program. But its title is "What Got You to What Got You to Here Won't Get You to There." And so a lot of leadership in church life starts with people leading a small group, perhaps, and they do it very well. But the very skills that help you lead a small group probably won't help you lead a church, and there's the problem. And this is starting to understand that where personality fits in and what type of leadership you need. I hope that helps.
Yeah, it is really, really, really helpful. Thank you. Many leaders will be communicating, and some as church leaders are going to be communicating via sermons. What might they need to think through with respect to personality preferences regarding their listeners and the way may receive what they're hearing?
Right. It depends how gifted you are. So, for instance, if Timothy Keller is listening to this podcast, Andy, my suggestion is don't do anything. You're doing just fine.
Yes.
Now, and here is the thing. So for someone like myself, who's not Tim Keller, I have to make sure there is enough structure so people have a clue where I'm going. It's being aware that I'm creating structure. But other folk manage to kill... how can I put this? We turn off and turn on to various people. So I'm going to give you... we ran a preaching class at our church. I did it with someone else, which was always a plus. And on one evening, what we did was we did 20 different YouTube clips. And the idea of these YouTube clips was for people to realise not everyone turns out to be the same sort of preacher. That actually there's different sorts of preachers. So what we did was we put examples and people had a chance to listen to them and then decide whether that was a sort of style that appealed to them. They could imagine working that. So these were all top quality preachers. We had Billy Graham, we had Bill Johnson, we had John Stott, we had a range of people. We had social gospel people, we had sound as a pound people, we had very charismatic, we had Chan, we had all sorts of people. Now, at the end, and there was about 12 of us in the room, at the end, the 10 ones that I liked, and I would like to be like, were the 10 that the others did not want. There was an absolute, pardon me, absolute split. So I liked 10, didn't like 10. They liked the ones that I didn't like, and you got the idea. And so then what was important was, when you looked at it, it had nothing to do with theology. Nothing at all. It was trying to ascertain what's going on here. It's not theology. It's not whether they're social gospel. It's not whether they're charismatic. And the dividing point in our church, and it will be different in other people that are listening, was that our church culture did not want passion in the sermon. Passion in the sermon was the biggest turnoff. So Billy Graham was kicked out, just the same that Bill Johnson was. And yet there were other folk that they just loved. And this gives you a clue. So actually, if you establish a teaching pattern and you're the only preacher that preaches in that style, whatever that style is, half the people are getting very, very, very little from it. Now, if it goes over a long time and they've got good house groups, well, maybe they'll stay in your church. Maybe they've got relationship, or God has told them and they're called to the church. But in general terms, if you keep banging on in a way that actually turns people off, and it's not the content, it's the style, and that's a personality thing, you are going to be in trouble. The sort of things that affect people are speed of delivery. Are we going to be slow and careful? Or are we going to be fast and energetic? And there are many, many of these sort of schemes. You know, anyway, I hope that helps.
That's enormously helpful. My last question, Phil, is many listening will be part of teams with different preferences. And although, you know, we've covered this to some degree already in the things you've said, but how can they kind of develop a corporate vision together in a way that maximises the different temperaments they bring and the church that they serve?
I love that. And the classic thing is what we do is all get around a table and we all contribute and it's all great. Collaborative leadership, I don't know if you dealt with that on this, but what I would say is if anyone in the team doesn't get vision, they're not intuitive, they don't get vision, you get they don't know what it's for, they don't know why they're bothering, why have we got a tagline, why have we got a vision, the best thing you can do as a leadership is just take them off the team for this moment, just not for him forever for that, just get them out of the room. I've been in situations where a church leader will come in who doesn't really... They'll be tasked with, this is the vision for the church, and I remember this specifically. The church leader comes in and first thing they said was, I don't believe in blue sky leadership. Next thing they did was get everyone to write down what they wanted in the vision, collected it, put it in a document, tried to make it a nice pattern, and then said, there you are, we've done it. This is absolutely Myers-Briggs, which is saying there are certain roles, and I'm not saying, because I know what you said there was the developing it, but what I'm talking about is the actual forming it, the actually envisaging it, having something to go after. There are many gifts that you can use to then implement it, to get it to come to be. All of the gifts, all of us, the idea, the glory of God is shown in all of us and the range of all of us. But at the very beginning, do not have people, unless they're prophetic gift, that do not get visions. It's a bit like we're gonna decide how we're going to run the football team and we're going to all these people in the room. And by the way, half of them don't play football. And another half of them never watch football, but somehow in church leadership, they've all got to have a vote, a role in this thing. So I would do that, and after that, it's a very big subject. But if I could give you one tip, is if the leadership team, anyone doesn't get vision, just say, it's okay, you can come next week.
that's very. I think a lot of people would maybe sigh of relief at this point. Okay, Phil. Well, time has defeated us, but. How can listeners get in touch with you for training in this area if they were, interested in learning more?
Certainly, if I give you my email, and they're welcome to go direct to that. My email is barkin.phil@gmail.com, and I'm specifically interested in people whose heart is, and go back to the very first question. The heart is they do not want to find when they leave the church that they've actually screwed up some other personality type and didn't know it.
And thank you for joining us. Do log on to Premier's website and you can find archived versions of Leadership File. You can go to the store and get a copy of my book, The Leadership Road Less Travelled. And I hope to see you again next Sunday at 3:30. Thanks for tuning in.
You've been listening to The Leadership File on Premier. Andy Peck serves as a tutor at CWR, a Christian charity whose courses and publications aim to apply God's word to everyday life. Contact him via email apeck@cwr.org.uk.